the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning and a very happy Thanksgiving Day. Here in the Central Valley, we welcomed quite a bit of rain yesterday, and it looks like much of the state did as well, and even some snow, and this should trickle on throughout the next few days. I wish all of you safe travels as you gather to meet with friends and family this Thanksgiving. You know, today's show is filled with lots of Thanksgiving Day facts, features, and it always gets me to reflect on the many men and women whose livelihoods revolve around growing the food and fiber that makes this holiday season that much more special. Moving on to what's happening in today's show, Brian German is talking with us about spray safe teaching events that are happening across the state. Taylor Hillman has details on a local hops grower who uses science for unknowns. And I'm starting off the show today with details on a bill that is said to preserve family farms. So let's jump right in. A new bill will help preserve family farms across the nation, including farms right here in California. In a report provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, a bill was introduced in the House of Representatives last week, and it will help more farm families continue operating their farms after the death of a loved one. The Preserving Family Farms Act of 2019 is sponsored by Jimmy Panetta of California and Jackie Worlorski of Indiana, and it has full support of the American Farm Bureau Federation. American Farm Bureau President Zibby Duvall said, quote, "Farm and ranch families often face a significant financial burden when they have to pay estate taxes. Farm families should be able to pay based on how their land is used, rather than its potential value as a commercial property, such as a shopping center. The legislation will give more families hope they can hold on to their farm when a loved one passes away. The bill modernizes the special use valuation provision of the estate tax. This valuation allows the property to be appraised as farmland rather than its development value when determining estate taxes. Increasing the amount of farmland or ranch land that can be valued at agriculture value rather than development value would help protect family-owned farms and ranch businesses by assessing estate taxes on the actual value of the businesses they've spent decades building." Duvall noted, "We strongly urge members of the House to co-sponsor this important bill."
Growing hops is still a learning process for a California producer. 2 full years into growing a small 10-acre hop plot in the Central Valley, Fowler Packing Company's umbrella business, Golden State Hops, is still learning how to produce the crop in California. Executive Vice President of Farming Grant Parnegian said he uses science to help him know how the hops are progressing.
Yeah, we do. I send samples up to a lab in Yakima, Washington, to get the internal qualities of the hops. And based on that, it kind of determines when I want to harvest. Each of these varieties has kind of a range of alpha and beta acids you want to be at. So I like to push it to the limits as much as I can. So I'll send the hops to the lab to get analyzed, and based off that information, I'll determine when to harvest. And also, when we ship and sell the hops, I include all that information to the buyer, so that way they know exactly what they're getting when they buy our product.
Parnegian said some of those clients have been repeat customers, which is something he, of course, is very appreciative of. But plans are to expand outside of that even more.
All the local breweries here in town have been very, very helpful. I appreciate all their feedback and actually using our hops. The breweries that you mentioned, they were the first guys that actually used our product. They were real happy with them. A few of them have been repeat customers. So I really appreciate all their support and feedback, and you know, hopefully the community here in Fresno enjoys having a local grown product in their beer. So, but yeah, along with the local breweries here in town, our goal is to expand our distribution now, and we've reached out to a few breweries down in the Bay Area and also down south in Southern California, the coastal areas of Santa Barbara, and have shipped some to those breweries as well too. So it's just trying to expand our distribution and go outside of the Central Valley as well.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
And stay tuned later in the show today as Taylor continues this interview. But for now, here's Brian German with another agriculture report.
A quarantine was recently declared following the detection of Wonglong Bing in a single citrus tree in an unincorporated area of San Bernardino County near Montclair, marking the first time the disease has been detected in the county. The 93-square-mile quarantine will link up with existing quarantines in Los Angeles and Orange counties, creating a contiguous area of more than 1,000 square miles. To date, there's been a total of 1,666 trees that have tested positive for HLB and 264 Asian citrus psyllids that have tested positive for the bacterium that causes HLB. Aside from the latest discovery in San Bernardino County, all other infected trees have been located in Los Angeles, Orange, and Riverside counties. So far, all of the HLB detections have only been made in residential properties. The infected trees have been or are being removed, and ACP treatments are being applied on a recurring basis to the remaining citrus in those areas. Fortunately, there's yet to be any HLB detected in any commercial groves via PCR testing. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has a host of resources available to monitor detections around the state, as well as other information for prevention and best practices. Abandoned and neglected citrus trees which may harbor ACP and HLB can be reported to the County Ag Commissioner's Office. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Hey. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The mission of the Spray Safe program is to encourage the safe application of agricultural chemicals through education and farmer-to-farmer communication and cooperation. President of the California Agricultural Commissioners and Sealers Association, Tim Pelican, highlighted the value of the Spray Safe events and the effort that's put into offering this type of resource to the agricultural community.
Well, Spray Safe specifically is meant for industry to take the lead in showing growers and applicators and PCAs the correct way to be using chemicals, new techniques, the idea that, you know, you don't go out and spray when it's blowing 15 miles an hour. But I think in general, when industry hears from other people that are in the industry, it means more than to get beat over the head by a regulator constantly. So that is the main part of it. The other part is it does require some commissioner staff time, so they have to make sure that they're supplying that backup, as well as getting industry involved to kind of work together to put these together. It's been 10 years, I think, in some cases where some of these events have taken place, so there's no infrastructure left of the people that used to help put those together, so you're really kind of starting from scratch. So I think CAPCA has really stepped up to the plate to help try to get some of these people back together and talking, and we look for there to be some real successful events this year.
For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Well, in today's livestock news, the nation's turkey producers have a little something to be thankful for this holiday season. Gary Crawford has the story.
It's Thanksgiving, and of course,
turkey is traditionally our guest of honor at Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Alfred Hitchcock. Now, up to this season, our turkey producers had been producing more birds than there were customers for them. Result, very low prices to producers, but now,
what we're really looking at is sort of a righting of the ship.
USDA livestock analyst Shay O'Shagham, the ship he's referring to is this last year and a half when turkey producers did expand production a lot, but consumer demand didn't keep up and wholesale turkey prices plummeted. But now producers have begun to slow the ship down.
And what we've seen recently is an increase in prices as producers over time have reduced production, brought it into line with demand.
So at wholesale during the first 3 weeks of November,
if we look at frozen whole hens, which again is typically what is served at a Thanksgiving meal, prices last year were about 92 cents a pound, and this year they're about 99 cents a pound.
Yeah, choppers are seeing retail prices averaging only 93 cents a pound. Supermarkets taking the loss to get us in to buy other things. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Thanks, Gary. The American Feed Industry Association is saying China's lifting of its ban on U.S. poultry imports is only a partial lifting. The association has received official confirmation from USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service that the announcement only includes poultry imports for human consumption. It does not include other poultry products like those used in pet foods. At this time, the important restriction for pet foods with poultry products is still in effect. The association said there's no difference in the risk of introducing poultry diseases between importing poultry for human or animal consumption. AFIA says it is extremely disappointed to learn that China is implementing only a partial lifting of the ban, and they look forward to working with APHIS and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative to rectify the situation. AFI's President and CEO, Constance Coleman, said China is a valuable market for the entire U.S. animal food industry for exports of feed, feed ingredients, and value-added products such as meat and poultry. And a new law says the 15 million egg-laying hens in Michigan's poultry flocks will have to lay their eggs in cage-free housing systems before the year 2025. An Associated Press report said Michigan Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist signed the legislation last week. The law also prohibits non-cage-free eggs from being sold in Michigan starting in the year 2025. Gilchrist said the measure ensures Michigan's standards for animal welfare are among the strongest in the U.S. At the same time, he said the law ensures egg producers can thrive. Under an older law, each hen was going to have to be confined in a one-square-foot space by April. The new law says each hen has to be housed in a cage-free system by the end of 2024. Michigan is now the fifth state and largest egg-producing state to adopt a cage-free law. The bill is part of a broader update of the state's animal industry laws. Large restaurant and grocery chains like McDonald's, Walmart, and Kroger have all said they'll only buy eggs from cage-free farms by 2025. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
The cost of a traditional Thanksgiving Day meal for 10 remains below $50 this year. Michael Clements has more in this report.
After 3 years of declines, the cost of a traditional homemade Thanksgiving Day meal is up 1 cent, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. AFBF economist John Newton says the annual survey found the cost is still less than $5 per person.
Our survey shows that this year the cost of a Thanksgiving dinner remains in line with prior year levels. The cost of a dinner for 10 came in at $48.91. That's 1 cent higher than what we saw in last year's survey.
Newton says the survey includes many staples of the Thanksgiving Day meal.
We include the cost of potatoes, pumpkin pie mix, pie shells, green beans, peas, stuffing, all the fixings that you need to make a homemade meal on Thanksgiving. And this year, the cost of the turkey came down to $20.80 for a 16-pound turkey. That's down 90 cents or 4% from prior year levels for that 16-pound bird.
Because Americans enjoy the most affordable food supply in the world, Newton says additional menu items are affordable.
The average American doesn't know that 8% or 8 cents of every dollar that they spend on food goes back to the farmer. And because food is so affordable in America, it's easy to buy all the extra fixings that you want, or even buy things like an organic turkey or additional brining or any of those factors on your Thanksgiving meal.
Michael Clements, Washington.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leo. There's a good chance you or a family member is enjoying a frosty beverage on this Thanksgiving holiday, and there is a chance that some of that flavor in the beer was grown right here in California. In today's interview segment, we rejoin AgNet West Taylor Hillman in his interview with Fowler Packing Company's offshoot business, Golden State Hops.
Grant Parnagian, Executive Vice President of Farming for Fowler Packing Company.
Grant, we're going to talk about some other stuff too today, but first of all, you dove into hops. You have started looking at hops. Tell me about what your name is and what you guys are growing.
The name of the company is Golden State Hops. It's an umbrella company of our parent company, Fowler Packing Company. And we are a 10-acre hop yard here in the Central Valley of California.
What varieties are you growing? I've always been interested to see what would grow here in this climate.
We have 5 varieties, 2 acres each. We have Centennial, Cascade, Chinook, Magnum, and Willamette.
How are they performing so far? You're about 2 years into this, you said?
Yeah, this is our second year of actually production and getting our product out to the market. 3 of the varieties are doing really well. The Cascade, Chinooks, and Magnum are performing well. The Willamettes, every year they're getting a little bit better. I think there's some farming cultural practices we can do to improve that variety as well. And the Centennials, we're struggling with those. I think for this area, it may be a little bit too hot. I know anywhere that they grow the Centennial variety, it's one of the most finicky varieties to grow anywhere. So I think just maybe being here with the climate that we have, makes it even a little bit more tough.
You're looking at some possibly some new varieties?
Yeah, I've started researching some other varieties. There's a newer class of varieties that came out a short time ago. It's called the Neo Mexicana class of varieties. There's four different varieties in that class, and I think they'll be a little bit more better suited for growing here in the Central Valley.
Let's talk about the actual process of growing them here. What time of year? Is it like a normal kind of a crop year? Are we looking at the same type of year?
You know what? For here in the Central Valley, it's pretty much a normal crop year with all the other summer fruits or vegetables that grow here. In the springtime, you know, end of March, they'll start emerging from the ground, and probably for the next month, they'll start to climb up the twine. We've got a state-of-the-art trellis system for the hops that's 20 feet high in the air, and so probably for a month or so, they'll grow to the top of the wires and start flowering. Usually around middle to end of July, we'll start the harvest. Our five varieties that we have probably takes us about a month to get through all the different varieties. The varieties that we have, they all come off at different times within that month, so it usually takes me about a 5 to 7 days to get through every variety, and there may be a few days in between varieties for the other one to start. So if I had to guess, on a normal year, it's, you know, between the middle of July to the middle end of August.
You're in your second year. How much are you guys harvesting now, and what are you guys looking at as like a goal down the road when you're running full steam?
Yeah, right now we're probably doing about 500 pounds to the acre on average. Our goal is in the next 2 years to probably get to around 1,500 pounds of pellets in an acre. So there's a big shrink when you harvest the hops. You know, if we were to harvest the cones, the flowers, you know, we were to get 100 pounds of flowers after you dry them down or dehydrate them, you pretty much lose a lot. And when you pelletize those 100 pounds of flowers, it actually turns into about 25 pounds of pellets. So there's a pretty big shrink involved with the process.
Let's talk about the process. That was the interesting part when you and I were talking before we started recording here, was you're doing it a little bit different in the fact that you can turn them pretty quickly in some cases, packed and ready to go. That's kind of the nice thing is when it comes to freshness, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of our main goal is to have the most fresh hops available. And yeah, our processes are different than how they normally do it. From harvest to actually pelletizing and packaging, we can do it in no longer than 24 hours. We don't bale our hops and store them till we get an order. We just go straight from harvesting to drying to pelletizing and packaging all within 24 hours. And so, I mean, our goal is to just have the most fresh hops available out there to the market.
We were talking about equipment and that drying process. You guys built your own dryer, and you guys do it a little lower temperature, and we believe that probably has some benefits too.
Yeah, our processes are a lot different than I believe most other people out there. We have our own harvesting machine that we have out at the ranch there, so we harvest right at the ranch, and then we bring it to our facilities here at our plant. And we built our own dehydrator here in our shop, and so after harvest we put them right into the dehydrator. We don't dry the hops at and no hotter than 115 degrees. Just for me, it's a personal preference. I think I'd want to try and dry them as low as the temperature as I can to try and preserve all the oils as we can. And then we process them into pellets. And after we process them into pellets, we lay them all out on a stainless steel table and let them cool down for a little while longer. Then we package them up with nitrogen and vacuum sealed bags, and we put them in the cold storage and hopefully wait for the orders.
That is a cool process. You also send them off. You told me you send them off to get analyzed up in Yakima so they can get all that information for you.
Yeah, we do. I send samples up to a lab in Yakima, Washington to get the internal qualities of the hops. And based on that, it kind of determines when I want to harvest. Each of these varieties has kind of a range of alpha and beta acids you want to be at. So I like to push it to the limits as much as I can. And also, when we ship and sell the hops, I include all that information to the buyer. So that way they know exactly what they're getting when they buy our product.
You got some local brewers already partnering with you guys, Pine and Palm Brewing, Tioga Sequoia Tactical Ops, House of Pendragon, 559 out of Clovis. But you were saying also that you've just shipped some outside of this valley too as well, right?
All the local breweries here in town have been very, very helpful. I appreciate all their feedback and actually using our hops. The breweries that you mentioned, they were the first guys that actually used our product. They were real happy with them. A few of them have been repeat customers. So yeah, I really appreciate all their support and feedback. And you know, hopefully the community here in Fresno enjoys having a local grown product in their beer. So. But yeah, along with the local breweries here in town, you know, our goal is to expand our distribution now, and we've reached out to a few breweries down in the Bay Area and also down south in Southern California, the coastal areas of Santa Barbara, and have shipped some to those breweries as well too. So it's just trying to expand our distribution and go outside of the Central Valley as well.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
According to this year's Thanksgiving edition of the annual Farmer Share publication from the National Farmers Union, American farmers and ranchers are receiving roughly 12 cents of every dollar that's spent on the Thanksgiving meal. According to the report, wheat farmers receive an average of just about 3 cents from a pack of 12 dinner rolls that retails for $2.69. Dairy producers received only $1.66 from a $4.59 gallon of milk. And turkey growers responsible for the centerpiece of the traditional Thanksgiving meal receive just 6 cents per pound, while turkeys are retailing at an average of nearly $1.50 a pound. NFU President Roger Johnson pointed out that that figure is particularly striking when considering the fact that poultry integrators received a little more than 60 cents a pound. Interestingly, throughout the rest of the year, farmers typically receive an average of about 14 cents of every food dollar spent by consumers. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
And in a report provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, as Americans eat a glut of food, Todd Gleason shares a glut of turkey facts for Thanksgiving Day from the University of Illinois Extension.
I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy Thanksgiving. Here's a list of turkey facts you might find of interest. Ben Franklin, did you know, in a letter to his daughter, proposed the turkey as the official United States bird. The average American eats about 16 pounds of turkey every year. 88% of Americans surveyed by the National Turkey Federation eat turkey on Thanksgiving, and 46 million turkeys are eaten each Thanksgiving, 22 million on Christmas, and 19 million turkeys at Easter. The average weight of a turkey purchased at Thanksgiving is 15 pounds. The heaviest turkey ever raised was 86 pounds. That's about the size of a large dog. A 15-pound turkey usually has about 70% white meat and 30% dark meat. The male turkey is called a tom. Tom turkeys have beards. And the female turkey is called a hen. Now, the turkey was domesticated in Mexico and brought to Europe in the 16th century. Turkeys lived almost 10 million years ago. In 1920, U.S. turkey growers produced one turkey for every 29 people in the United States. Today, growers produce nearly one turkey for every person in the country. Male turkeys gobble. Hens do not. They make a clicking noise. Wild turkeys can fly for short distances, at about 55 miles an hour, and can run 20 miles an hour. Turkeys are believed to have been brought to Britain in 1526 by a Yorkshire man. He acquired 6 turkeys from American Indian traders and sold them for tuppence in Bristol. Henry VIII was the first English king to enjoy turkey, and Edward VII made turkey eating fashionable. The 5 most popular ways to serve leftover turkey are in a sandwich, stew, chili, or soup, casseroles, and as a burger. Hey, you have a great Thanksgiving. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.